This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Hello, everyone. I have a big announcement to make. In addition to the usual Tuesday episodes, I invite you to tune in every Wednesday for a special episode about the science of activism. Every Wednesday, I will give the microphone to world-class researchers who study the effectiveness of animal advocacy and vegan activism. Learn from them what are the best and worst ways to make a positive difference in the world. Since starting this podcast, I have come across strong, some would even say stubborn, opinions on what the way forward looks like. I even developed my own strong opinions. But this is our reality check, a way to verify if our beliefs are backed by evidence and check if our perception of reality is not distorted. So connect every Wednesday and become the most informed and effective activist out there. Thank you.
Hi, this is Bjorn from the Vegan Report. Today, I'm going to talk to you about the behavioral science of our food service institutions, and how we can shape it to make people choose less meat, and why an all-vegan restaurant might not be as effective as you think. My name is Bjorn Olofsson. I'm a researcher and writer who is obsessed with the questions relating to meat reduction, animal welfare, and veganism worldwide. If you want to catch up with my work, you can follow my Substack, More Than Meets the Eye. Meats spelled M-E-A-T-S. You could also follow me on LinkedIn, Bjorn Johan Olofsson, or go to my personal website, bjornjohan.com. If you're curious about more of the science of activism, you can share this episode of the Vegan Report with your friends or whoever would benefit from it. And we encourage you to take a listen every single Wednesday to learn more about this important research. So, last month, I took a plane to the AVA Summit. That's the Animal and Vegan Advocacy Summit in Nairobi, Kenya. The summit was great. That's not the important part. But I had to take an extremely long plane ride from Barcelona to Nairobi. It was over 8 hours in length. And if any of you are vegan, you know that it can be quite difficult to eat vegan food on an airplane. So I had to do this very annoying thing that I'm sure most of you can relate to. I had to buy my ticket. Then afterwards, I had to log into the airline, manage my booking section, and then scroll and scroll and scroll and find this tiny little option where I could change my meal service from a default meal to a vegan option. You know, at the end of the day, it took me 15 minutes, but it was kind of an annoying task that I didn't really want to go through. And it just is a bit annoying every single time I have to fly. And then if I forget to do it, which does happen once in a while, I'm sitting on the airplane and I'm trying to talk to the flight attendant, trying to see if there's any vegan food they have in the back. One time, I remember a few years ago, I had forgotten to do this and they had brought me every single piece of fruit they could find on the plane because that was the only vegan food they had. So I was sitting there with my tray table and they had like 4 apples and 2 bananas and like a pear in front of me. You know, better than nothing, but not exactly the vegan meal I had been hoping for. So why am I telling you this? This is because airplanes operate on a meat default. If you do nothing, they will serve you a meat option by default. Occasionally there's a vegetarian default, but basically no airline in the world has a vegan default. If they were to have a vegan default, all the food they would serve would be vegan, But if you wanted to eat meat or eggs or dairy, you would have to log in to the airline's website, manage your booking, figure out how to add the meat and dairy to your meal. But the thing is, most people wouldn't go through that trouble because it is kind of an annoying task. This is a central concept called a food default. We can have a plant-based default, a meat default, or various versions of it. How are we presenting this types of food to consumers? Right now, in the vast majority of the world, the food is presented with meat and dairy as the default options. I, as a vegan, and I'm sure many people listening to this, have to put in extra effort if we want to eat vegan food. This is true in cafeterias, in restaurants, in bars, on airplanes, in corporate offices, workplaces, catering events, anything you can really think of where you eat food. We have to put in extra effort. But what if we could flip it? Now let's talk about behavioral science of food, specifically something called a nudge. A nudge, you probably heard of. It was first popularized in a 2008 book called Nudge, by Richard Thaler and Cass Sunstein. Right now, I'm working with the Better Food Foundation as a research specialist on a series of projects all related to food-based nudges. The idea is simple. What if we could change the way our food systems are presenting the options to the consumers without actually removing the choice at all? That's what a nudge is. A change of the options, not the removal of them. If I were to walk into a vegan restaurant, none of the food would be nudged to me because there is no option to eat meat or dairy if I wanted to. I don't want to. I'm vegan. But let's say I brought in some of my friends and family to a vegan restaurant. They would essentially have to eat vegan as long as they stayed within the restaurant premises. But a nudge is a way to position the option in such a way that people are more likely to choose it. There's a million different types of nudges. And we're going to talk about several of them today. First, I want to talk about plant-based defaults. In a plant-based default, a vegan option is presented to the consumer as the default option. So let's say you're signing up for a conference. You'd have to log in and put extra effort if you wanted the meat option. The same example with an airline. In a cafeteria, maybe all of the vegan food is visible to the consumer, and they'd have to ask a staff member to go to the back and bring the meat option out, which might take a little extra time, maybe 5 or 6 minutes. In a restaurant, all the items on the menu could be vegan, but the consumer would have to add the meat or dairy options for an extra cost. For example, think of a vegan burrito that was given to the consumer, but they could add chicken for an extra $3 or €3. In a vegan default, a plant-based default, we can see huge changes. So last year, I did a review, a literature review of all of the studies on plant-based defaults. And I found that when we had a meat default, the vegan option was chosen on average 16.4% of the time. But in a plant-based default, the vegan option was chosen 73.8% of the time. That's pretty amazing, right? That's over a threefold increase. We're going from a less than 20% vegan to around 3 in 4 options being entirely vegan. And here's what's the crucial thing. The meat eaters who were able to eat meat aren't going to complain. That's the problem that we've seen with many other restaurants or Meatless Mondays or Veganuary or vegan restaurants or something, where the choice is essentially removed from the consumer. Sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes there's backlash. For whatever reason, a lot of people seem to really, really like their meat. And when they feel as if it's been taken away from them, they might react in a negative way or stop supporting that business or something like that, which has caused a lot of those initiatives to fail. Not all, but enough that we should be concerned about it. The benefit of a plant-based default is that everybody's happy. Most people are eating vegan. The people who really, really crave the meat are still going to eat the meat, but they're not likely to complain about it. This is the central advantage, in my opinion. we're able to work with food service institutions that might not be willing to work with us otherwise, because we are giving them something that's not going to give them backlash or harm the consumer in any way. There is one thing we should keep in mind with plant-based defaults, is that maybe the people who eat vegan might eat more meat later in the day. We only found one study that measured this, and they did find that they're likely to eat more meat later in the day, but that amount was less than the amount of meat saved by the default. So it still works, but it is a cause for concern that we have to make sure that the food is filling enough that people are less likely to eat it later in the day. On the flip side, there's another type of behavior change that might be very positive, which is by having people eat vegan, perhaps even accidentally, for a long period of time, they might be more willing to go vegan later in their life or to reduce their meat consumption. I haven't been able to find a study that relates to this question specifically, but I think it's really worth considering. In my opinion, I think it's likely that when a plant-based default has some sort of messaging or narrative or framing campaign behind it to explain to people exactly why this is valuable and why it's meaningful, it might be more likely to change people's minds about veganism as a diet and as an identity. For example, in New York City hospitals, they gave people a plant-based default, and then after they left, they gave them an informational packet about why this was important and why this was implemented. I think this is very exciting. If we can pair plant-based defaults with other forms of media and messaging campaigns, we might be able to use it as a way to shift social norms, which is crucial for making the world a more vegan-friendly and less hostile to animals. So, a plant-based default is super exciting. And I think it's most exciting in universities because students are going to be more willing to be flexible, to experiment, and hopefully to consider the climate and animal welfare implications of what they're eating. So that's why I'm working with the Better Food Foundation. The Better Food Foundation is working with university students to implement these plant-based defaults across the United States and other places in the world. I'm excited to see this spread. I think not much effort has been put into this as an intervention historically, but with a lot more time and resources behind it, I do think that this could take off because of the benefits I mentioned earlier. There's not going to be a backlash. We're going to see huge changes in consumption, and it might even change social norms. But defaults aren't the only way to nudge consumers into choosing vegan. So let's talk about menus. On a menu, there are a million different ways we can reshape them to be more inclusive of the vegan food. And the first thing we need to keep in mind is that we probably shouldn't even be using the word vegan at all. I think a lot of people are hip to this nowadays, right? Plant-based is the new term. We should all be using plant-based. But plant-based is not that much better than vegan. It's better, but not that much. Instead, we need to be using terms that appeal to things like health, the origin of the food, the taste of the food. So instead of saying vegan burger, we should use something like umami burger, or spicy chipotle burger, or Mediterranean bowl as opposed to a vegan bowl or something like that. We're basically trying to give all of these other indicators about what's going to be in the food. Because the word vegan and the word plant-based, like it or not, often make people think about what the food doesn't have. It doesn't have meat. It doesn't have dairy. And for many people, they assume that means it doesn't have flavor. I mean, obviously, I disagree with that. I think vegan food is great, but not everybody thinks that way, right? So instead, we need to be framing these foods in a way that is exciting and appealing and engaging for people, right? What would you rather eat? A vegan burger or a spicy umami burger with sauteed mushrooms on top? Something like that. Doesn't that sound better? Well, unless you don't like mushrooms. In that case, I don't know what to tell you. Mushrooms are great. So if we're going to be reshaping the titles of the food options, we can also be reshaping the way that the menu itself is structured. Something that I really like as a consumer, because I'm a vegan, I like it when I look at a menu and everything is extremely well labeled. Maybe there's a section or a box in the corner that says vegan options in big bright green bold letters. To me, that's great because I know exactly what I could order. But that's actually not great for flexitarians or reducitarians or people who might want to eat vegan every once in a while, because they're not going to look at that section because they don't think it's for them. Instead, not only do we need to integrate the vegan options with the entire menu, it's actually best to start with or end with the vegan options. So the plant-based food should be at the top of the menu, right where people can see it. A small change of reordering and reintegrating the menu, but it can increase the amount they're ordered by up to 56%. So we should avoid calling them vegan. We should make sure that they're blended into the entire menu. Of course, for vegan consumers, it's always good for us to know what we can and can't eat. So you can include a small leaf symbol by the menu option or some small symbol that's going to be ignored by most people to indicate that it is in fact fully vegan, but it shouldn't be the main selling point. It shouldn't be in the title of the menu option, for example. Okay, something else to keep in mind is that the food has to be good. That's just an underlying principle for all forms of vegan outreach, but the food has to be good. It needs to be culturally appropriate. It needs to be diverse. It needs to be filling, and it needs to be tasty. Also, we need to make sure that the staff members who are distributing this food understand why they should be using vegan and plant-based nudges and defaults. If they're not bought into the idea, they're not really going to be likely to implement it correctly. So staff training is one of those underrated aspects here. If you're trying to implement this in your community, you really need to have a conversation with all of these staff members, or else it's probably not going to work after a long period of time. Okay, so that's why it's important to frame the way that we're selling vegan items to people. When people think of veganism, they often have negative associations in mind. So by avoiding that label, and by presenting the food in a much more inclusive and exciting way, people are far more likely to choose it. So how is this actually being implemented? Well, there are plenty of groups that are working hard on implementing these types of nudges. Greener by Default and the Better Food Foundation are two of them. If you're interested, you can collaborate with these organizations by reaching out. I could put a link in the show notes. If you're a student in university, I recommend you reach out to the Better Food Foundation. If you're working in a corporation or a hospital or any sort of other institution, I recommend reaching out to Greener by Default. And you can even email me at bjorn@betterfoodfoundation.org if you have questions about this. If you're working for a nonprofit that's working on nudges, you can join the NGO working group by the Better Food Foundation. You can reach out to me by email if you want to be added. But even if you don't want to work on this professionally, you can still do local activism to get your institutions to frame the food in a better way. Something to keep in mind is that when you're talking to somebody about why this is important, you want to appeal to their motivations. I'm sure many people listening to this are super concerned about animal welfare and animal rights, and I get that. I am as well. But the reality is a lot of other people in the world have different motivations. They might want to, for example, reduce the climate emissions of the food that they're serving. They might want to make their food more inclusive to people who have dietary restrictions or allergies, or maybe they're kosher or halal, or they can't digest dairy, things like that. Or maybe they have a climate commitment that they're trying to live up to, and the food service is a good way for them to reach that goal. So try to understand what the person you're talking to is motivated by. And then you can try to talk to them and advocate why a plant-based default or better plant-based nudges are going to help them reach their goal. For example, if they're concerned about climate and sustainability, you can talk about all of the climate effects of animal-based foods, especially beef and pork. But make sure that they don't replace the beef and pork with chicken or fish, because that could actually result in more animals being harmed and eaten because they're the small body problem, in which smaller animals need to be killed in greater quantities to create the same amount of meat. So if you have questions about this, I strongly recommend you reach out to the Better Food Foundation. But I am excited about the concept of plant-based nudges. To me, this is a way to reshape the way that we are presenting food to the world. It works. People are more likely to eat vegan when they don't really know the way it's presented to them. because when they walk into a restaurant, they might not even know that the restaurant has been nudging them to select certain options this entire time. I hope that this intervention is going to do a lot of positive impact for the world going forward. And let me know if you have any questions. As always, thank you so much for listening. I am really grateful that people are excited about the research behind vegan activism. Because if we're not looking at the research, if we're not thinking about what's impactful, what is evidence-based, what's going to work going forward, our activism and our advocacy is always going to be stagnant. That's what's exciting about thinking about the data and the impact. We're going to keep getting better every single day and keep getting our and making sure we're making the world a better place for animals. Thank you so much for listening.